Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. And I will tell you, here he is, one of my favorite guests of all time. And I've been doing this, I don't know how many years, 25, 28 years, more like 28 years, maybe longer.
Wow.
I know. And there he is. Mr.
You are old.
He is no longer one of my favorite guests. He is now someone I will never have on the radio again. Here is David Fry. If indeed you ever watch a dog show on television, on national television, this is the guy who has been broadcasting that dog show now for how many years, Mr. Fry?
This will be 23. Yeah. 23.
Look who's old now. We're talking about...
Yeah, well, you know what? I know I'm getting old because all my stories have to either start or end with, you weren't even born then. But 23 years with this dog show, I mean, those kinds of relationships, as you know, in the media world, they don't happen very often. And John and I have been together for 23 years now doing this show.
Yeah, he's talking about the National Dog Show on Thanksgiving Day, presented by Purina, which is on NBC. And also, he's talking about John, meaning John O'Hurley, who we will talk to next week on the show. But this week, we have David Fry. So let's talk, first of all, about the National Dog Show presented by Purina. I also want to talk with you, though, about animal-assisted activities and the human-animal bond. In fact, we just slid by International Human-Animal Bond Day, which was November 8th. So, Mr. Fry, first of all, let's talk about dog shows. This is a big one, isn't it? Not only with the ratings and you have millions of people watching, it's amazing, I think. Were you surprised, by the way, when you began to do this? And it's continued, in fact, it's grown every year, that this is one of the most watched shows on TV at all?
It is pretty amazing. But, you know, in our world, we've got the great time slot following the Macy's parade and the perfect potential audience from that of all these great families that are sitting around waiting for the turkey to come out of the oven and looking for something to do, and we give it to them. It's, you know, I grew up in a football coach's family. It was always football on Thanksgiving Day. We never had really any other choices. But now people do have the choice. And we say, you know, hold on to that remote until 2 o'clock because we're on from 12 to 2 in every time zone. And in Chicago, I think we're still on from 12 to 2.
Okay.
And people have a choice, and they want to take a look at what we're doing and see their own dog, their own breeds there, and maybe root for the competition, too, and see what happens.
Yeah, so it's interesting that, first of all, this is family-friendly TV at its finest. So all the generations do literally sit. And so here's what can happen in a household. David, you are causing households to break up. You think politics is divisive? Not like a dog show, because there is Grandpa saying, I believe it'll be the Springer Spaniel. But Grandma, and they've been married 62 years, is saying, no, you're crazy, Pops. It's going to be the Golden Retriever. Finally, this year, it'll be a Golden Retriever. But the nephew says, no, it'll be the Scottish Terrier. And they have all these arguments about who is going to win the dog show. That's actually true. Don't winners, haven't you heard from people who watch the show that they do so with the family? Sometimes a family gathering, oftentimes for Thanksgiving, but they all have their kind of votes in as to who is going to win the show.
You know, I hear all the time about people having pools, you know, and trying to bet the bracket like March Madness, you know, and bracketology, as it were. And it happens all the time. I get calls from people saying, hey, give me some hints here. Let's help me out. Tell me who the top dogs are and who's going to be there, and let's see what happens. So, yeah, it's fun. And the nice thing about it is people don't have to run off to another room to be on their iPhones and do this and do that, because we've got something for everybody. We really do. There's, you know, 213 breeds and varieties, and they'll see almost all of them any year. And we've got something for everybody. And if it's your own dog, if it's your own breed, the dog is sitting on the couch next to you at home. I call it the alma mater factor.
Yeah.
Root for that breed. If it's a Brittany, if it's a Cavalier, my two breeds, I'm always rooting for them to do well, too. And I know my dogs are as well.
Interesting you talk about brackets and betting, because we are going to, before the end of the interview... Thank you for bringing that up, Mr. Fry, because now for sure, you're welcome. Now for sure, I am going to ask you before we're done, which dogs you think are more likely to do well in this dog show, which has been going on in Philadelphia for a long time, hasn't it?
Well, it has since we started doing dog shows back in the 1800s, but we got locked in on this one in the early 1930s, and we've had it every year since then, but we had it a lot of years before that as well. But the fun part is that we've got generations that go back that far. Somebody says, you know, my grandfather used to tell me about this dog show. And we can answer every question they have about the history of the dog show and the history of dogs. It lines up well with the Kennel Club of Philadelphia and the great things that we do as the National Dog Show.
Okay, I can quote you. You said, we've been doing this dog show since the 1800s. You and John have been together that long, apparently, so look who's calling me old. Even before television was around, you've been somehow broadcasting this dog show. All right, so
I got to say that between you and John, those are two of the longest relationships I've ever had in my life, so I'm quite proud of that.
Well, yes. So what makes a good pairing on TV? I've seen you and John work behind the scenes. We're talking, first of all, for people who may not know, John O'Hurley has been everywhere, Broadway, literally on Broadway, performing on lots of TV shows, everything from a game show host to Jay Peterman on Seinfeld and all so many other things. What is it like to work with John O'Hurley?
It's as entertaining for me as it is for the viewers. I got to tell you that. And it's fun because every once in a while we're watching the action and he'll say something, he'll make some observation. And I think that wasn't John O'Hurley. That was Jay Peterman. I said, where's Jerry? Where's Elaine? Where's Kramer? Where are all my Seinfeld buddies? Because that's what he does. He's an entertainer. He's a talented guy. He's got so much talent in other areas as well as his acting that he is fun to be around. But I'm having the same good time as everybody else. But I think that's why we're there. I want John in 23 years, John has become pretty educated. He's probably got a pretty good eye for the great show dogs. But through the years, he is the guy who's supposed to ask the question that the people at home are wondering about. You know, hey, what's the deal on that poodle haircut? Or hey, look at the Commodore. That looks like the breed of dog you would buy if you were opening a car wash. That was one of his great lines. I remember that to start.
Okay, we'll explain.
It's been like that for 23 years, and I love it.
Okay, we'll explain when we come back what he meant, if you don't even know, and a lot of people may not, what a Commodore is. It is a breed of dog, and we'll talk about why that line is actually very funny. And we will talk about why poodles are cut the way they are. David Fry knows all the answers. We'll hear those answers, I think, when we come back on WGN. David Fry, the host of, or the co-host, of the National Dog Show presented by Purina. It's on Thanksgiving Day after the Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade. It's on NBC. What time in all time zones, John? I mean, David?
Noon to 2, all time zones.
All time zones. All right, we were talking about, you work with John O'Hurley, who will be on this show next week. So let's talk about what some of the comments he made. One was about the Commodore looks like what? A dog that's just gone through a car wash?
No, he said that, you know, this looks like the kind of dog you would buy if you were about to open up a car wash.
Why would he say that?
Because they've got that corded coat that looks like those things that they're rubbing on your car as you go through the auto wash.
Can I give you a bit of trivia?
Of course.
Thank you. The things that hang down in a car wash, I don't know, they must have a name, that John is referring to. Those big things, they must be 12 feet long, right? Or longer.
Yes, yes, you know,
and
exactly.
The car goes through there. What they often, so here's what an idea, I believe it came from Ken Ramirez, who then was the chief animal trainer at the Shedd Aquarium. And now aquariums do this wherever there are beluga whales, because those long things turn out to be whale toys. They play with them. Really? I don't make this stuff up.
Well, you know what? Well, maybe we should use that on the air this year. Let's see if we could do it.
Just so I get credit.
The Commodore's playing with the whales.
Well, you know what? After all these years, it would be nice to get a mention, but that's okay. Now, let me ask you about
Poodle. We're always thinking of you, Steve.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of. So poodle haircuts, why are they cut the way poodles are cut?
You know, poodles, first of all, are great dogs. They're great personalities and temperaments. They're intelligent. And they were originally a man's hunting companion. They're a water retrieving dog, and that haircut has its basis for the fact that they would go dive in these cold water ponds and things to retrieve the game. And they kept the hair long on their chest and on their head and on their ankles, if you will, their stifles, to protect them from the cold. And that's the basis of that haircut. It's a little bit exaggerated now, perhaps, but nonetheless, it adds to what the dog's all about. And it's fun to see that. If I were their PR guy, if I were the Poodle Club of America's PR guy, I would say to them, it's okay to let them be shown in a sporting cut as opposed to this cut that we all see. And they're beautiful. My God, poodles are beautiful dogs. But, you know, let's show them as a working dog, too, and think about all the great things that they can do.
You know, I think, and I'm going to ask you what the underrated dog breeds are. And I think poodles would be, for me anyway, on that list, because I don't think people quite, unless you've had a poodle, then you know. And I'm talking about standard, miniature, or toy, but greatly the standard. Everyone talks, and rightly so, about how smart border collies, Australian shepherds are, and they are. But I think poodles, particularly maybe standard poodles, are almost right up there too. What do you think?
I agree with that. I'd have a black standard poodle in a moment, and they give you a constant challenge. They're always up. They're always ready to go somewhere with you. And most dogs are, of course. I don't mean to leave anybody out of that equation, but yeah, I think they get a bad rap because of that haircut. People think they're something else rather than a great companion dog and a very smart athletic dog, fun to be around. So there's my bit for the poodles. They come in three sizes. They come in a bunch of colors. We got a poodle for everybody, and you don't have to have. You don't have to go somewhere else to find that exotic look and that exotic coat and sort of a hypoallergenic dog. I mean, as hypoallergenic as they can be. I think there's a lot of good things going on with poodles.
I do, too. But that brings me to another point that you may not want to talk about, but I'm about to force you to do it. So what about all these doodles, you know, that are supposed to be hypoallergenic and... All right. So first of all, you rightly so questioned whether poodles in the first place, a pedigree poodle, is hypoallergenic. They can be better for a lot of people with allergies, but they're not absolutely hypoallergenic. So there's that thing. But now you've bred it with whatever breed, you know, there's the Bernedoodle. So you're breeding it with a Bernese Mountain Dog. Well, how are the genes going to, you know, it's like rolling the dice, right? Or you breed it with, what are some of the other ones?
They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And I say that, you know, with sort of a tongue in cheek, because they are everywhere. You can make any breed into a doodle breed of some kind if you breed it to some other dog and say, oh, yeah, I've got one of these. And I don't want people getting the dog because they think the name's cute. And they want to be trendy and have a doodle dog. The whole beauty of purebred dogs is their predictability. I know when I get a standard poodle puppy that goes from a 2-pound ball of fluff, and they're all 2-pound balls of fluff at some point in their life, what's it going to grow into? And I've never met a doodle that didn't have the greatest temperament and personality and happiness to them. And I think that's great. If that's what you want in a dog, if that's the most important thing, then fine. But we can give you the same thing with purebred dogs. We can give you the predictability of knowing what they're going to look like, how they're going to act, what their temperament's going to be, what their grooming and conditioning needs may be. And I think that's probably more important when you're talking about families and having a lot of time with your dog. Mm-hmm. You should be prepared for that. And I asked these doodle people, I said, how much did they tell you when you got this dog as a puppy? What did they tell you it would weigh? And they say 30 pounds. I said, what's he weigh now? 65. I said, well... Maybe you didn't want a 65-pound dog, but you love this dog so much that he's there, and he doesn't exactly fit your family, but you love him, and he loves you, and that's great. They have wonderful temperaments and personalities. That's great. But we could do the same thing with you with purebred dogs, and we'll find a dog to match your lifestyle and your personality and your temperament and your needs, and you don't need to take a chance on a doodle dog. People don't realize this. They say, well, I'm going to breed a poodle to a Labrador. I'm going to get the poodle coat and the poodle temperament, and I'm going to get the Labrador's happy demeanor and stuff. Well, what if you get the Labrador's coat?
Right. That's right.
There's a shedding dog for you, and the poodle comes out as something else. You don't know that. We've had these breeders for years who are dealing with a much smaller gene pool with purebred dogs that they know what's in there. They know what's going to come out, and they can tell you this. And you can't do that with doodle dogs. God bless them. Everybody should have a dog. I don't care whether it's a doodle dog or a purebred dog. Everybody should have a dog in their life. But get one that fits your lifestyle, fits your family, fits your personality. And a dog that can go running with you. Do you want a dog to go running? Don't get a bulldog. If you want a dog to watch TV with you at night, don't get a dog that's going to take up the whole couch and doesn't let you on it. Get the dog that fits.
I see what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. But what I was getting at, and you touched on it a bit, it's a roll of the genetic dice here. And if poodles aren't clearly hypoallergenic in the first place, and they aren't, then breeding that dog with a Labrador, so now you've got the Labradoodle, you're taking one extreme because Labradors are high in dander. A lot of people, they shed. A lot of people are allergic. If you're allergic to dogs, that's higher on the list, although it varies from dog to dog, even within the breed, but that's another story. And then you breed that Labrador with a doodle and with a poodle, and now you've got the Labradoodle, but you don't know, as you point out, and I want to make a point of that, these dogs aren't necessarily hypoallergenic. I know you want to jump in there and say something. I won't let you because we have commercials, and we'll be right back with David Fry.
Hold that thought.
Yes. We put David Fry on hold, which I enjoy doing. We'll be back on WGN. I have a very special announcement to make. It's back. My Petcast. That's right. The WGN Radio Petcast. You can simply go to WGNradio.com, where, by the way, you can hear all of these past shows, but including the Petcast. Just go to where it says podcast, or go to Steve Dale's Pet World. At both locations, you can see or hear or both the Petcast. So the first one, which has already launched, that's the sound of it launching. Very authentic, right? Was with Dr. Ernie Ward. Dr. Ernie Ward speaks around the world about nutrition for dogs and cats. He is the founder of the Association of Pet Obesity Prevention. And we talk about how we're going to be thinking differently moving forward regarding pet obesity. It's not always the person's fault for feeding too many treats or feeding too much food. All of that at WGNradio.com. David Fry, co-host of The National Dog Show, presented by Purina. It's on Thanksgiving Day.
Nice.
Hey, thank you very much, but you're not hiring me. It's on Thanksgiving.
You're professional.
Thank you. It's on Thanksgiving Day after the Macy's.
Thank you.
What? What was that? What are you mumbling?
I said, why, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. That was my TV voice.
It's on Thanksgiving Day after the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. We're talking about doodle dogs here, and Mr. Fry, you wanted to jump in.
Well, I don't want to devote all our time to doodle dogs,
no.
But it's as you say. First of all, there's no such thing as a dog that's hypoallergenic. They all are allergenic to some point, and that's the doodle dog people were using that as their marketing tool all along. But think about this: if you breed a doodle litter. Pick two breeds, the doodle and the Labrador, because that's sort of the starting point for a lot of people when they start thinking about this. That dog has 8 puppies. How many of them do you think are going to have the poodle coat and the Labrador temperament? Well, maybe some of them will have a little bit of each, but there's going to be a lot of them in there that are going to have the Labrador coat. What's a breeder doing with those dogs that don't meet those supposed requirements of being a Labradoodle? they're going to be shedding. They're going to be, you know, they're going to weigh more than poodles. They're going to be a different dog. And what happens to them? What does a breeder do with them? You know, you can think the worst if you want. They're going to dispose of them somehow. Maybe not, but I worry about that because they're oversaturated in the market now. There's two, everybody seems to have one, and they're not all thrilled with that. And God bless them. I love them. They have great personalities.
Yeah,
they're happy dogs. But maybe you didn't want a 75-pound dog.
Well,
maybe you didn't want a dog that has a lot of poodle, a lot of coat that you have to worry about. So, you know, I don't want to, I'm going to get us both in trouble here. The longer we go talking about doodles, I just want to talk about purebred dogs because their predictability is what it's all about. I know what they're going to look like. I know the kind of temperament. I know their conditioning needs. I know what kind of time I've got to give them at home. And that's what's important with that relationship.
Yeah, I agree. And at the end of the day, a dog is a dog is a dog. And dogs and humans have a very special relationship, which is something that I know if you could spend your life focusing on, David Fry, this is what it would be. And you have been involved with animal-assisted activities ever since I've known you. I mean, for decades now. And you've seen the good that dogs do in situations where they're in hospitals or nursing facilities or rehabilitation facilities or specifically children's hospitals, and the list goes on. Libraries for reading dogs, for example. I mean, you've seen this. You've been a part of it with your own dogs. Here's what I want to ask you. When you first got involved in all this, I believe you had a fight to convince the facilities to say, it's okay to allow a dog. And now, in my experience anyway, it's actually the opposite of that. There aren't enough dogs to fill the need. Can you talk about that?
Sure. When we were out there, when we first got started, we were having to sell the idea to people. The very famous cancer hospital in New York City didn't allow dogs. And suddenly in 1 year, they dropped down in the ratings from U.S. News and World Report in terms of the cancer hospital. And I said, you know what? MD Anderson's number one. MD Anderson has a thriving therapy dog program, and I think you should do that. And eventually we talked them into giving us a pilot program on one floor in Women's Health. And from that, within 3 months, we were in virtually every company in the hospital, and they love it. They love it. My dog, Trudat, and I, my Cavalier, we're leaving later this morning for our weekly visit. We do 2 days a week at the VA hospital here in Seattle, and she's the queen of the VA. But you know what it is. When a dog walks into the room, the energy changes. People smile, they talk, they get up and take a step, they do things that their therapists maybe have not been able to get them to do. But a dog can get them to do that. They can motivate them to do things like range of motion exercise. You know, just, oh, this is boring, it hurts us. I'm going to put a brush in your hand, you brush my dog. I'm going to give you a treat, you're going to give the dog the treat. And they start to do things that are helping the healing process, if not physically, at least mentally. And I think that's what it's all about with our dogs. And I quote scripture. I'm not proselytizing, but I quote scripture. Ecclesiastes said, a faithful friend is the medicine of life. And I'm not a biblical scholar, but I'm telling you, Ecclesiastes had a dog because he knew it. Yeah. He knew what was going on.
I love how you put that. I've not heard you say that before. And I love it. David, people think maybe who haven't participated in this, that it's kind of all made up, you know, that how can dogs make that much of a difference? I've seen it. I know multiple times you've seen it. Can you give me an example?
Well, I think a lot of times, I mean, you know, I was at the Ronald McDonald House in New York City a lot, for kids with cancer.
Yeah.
And exactly what I said, that you will come in and the kids, you see some kids, they're sitting at two high back wheelchairs and you know that they're in trouble. And their parents are feeding them, they're talking to these kids, and the kids, you know, they're going through their paces. But they look over and they see my dog. They see me with a dog, and one of them whistles at my dog. And so I say, hey, it sounds like, to the parents, I said, hey, it sounds like your kids would like to see the dog. We were in a big room, and they kind of motioned me over. They were Latinos and spoke Spanish, but dogs are a universal language. And I brought them over, and they're smiling and looking at the dog. And then the one kid whistles at the dog, and the dog looks up at him and lays down and rolls over without any command at all from me. And the two kids just erupt in laughter, and they think it's a great thing. Now I look at the kids, they're smiling, laughing. I look at the parents and they're smiling. When you get the parents to smile, when you get the kids to smile, you know the parents are going to be smiling too. But now he goes over to the other kid, and the kid is looking at him, and the kid drops his hand off the wheelchair, palm out, and my dog runs over there and puts his foot up and high fives him. I said, my God, I said, I couldn't train him to do that. He did that. And that's what the dogs are all about. They're spontaneous. They love life. They'll do whatever it is that you're doing. My dogs, if they could talk, they would say, me too, because they want to go everywhere with me. And that helps with all the people that they go to visit. Now, Trudette, my Cavalier, is the queen of the VA in Seattle, and she runs into rooms. She gets there. She knows where the rooms are with patients that she's got a thing with, and that's just what dogs do in our daily lives. It doesn't have to be in a hospital. It can be in your living room. Yeah. It can be on your bed. It can be anywhere you're going with your dog. That's what it's all about. They make our lives better, and that's what we're going to show you at the dog show. All these dogs that can do that for you in their own special way, by being a different breed or a different variety, and they're going to fit your lifestyle. They're going to do that for you the same thing as our dogs that are working in hospitals and with kids do every day.
Yeah, I want to talk about more. Is that what I just said? I want to talk more about. That's what I meant to say, Mr. Fry. Take two. I want to talk more about exactly what we're talking about now, and that is the miracle that really isn't a miracle. It's what dogs are. I wonder, though, if some dogs actually kind of know how to do this work. There's lots of dogs doing it. Are some dogs actually born to do this sort of thing? We'll find out with David Fry when we come back on WGN. David Fry is the co-host of the upcoming, I can't believe Thanksgiving Day is right around the corner. The upcoming, yeah, I know, it's terrible. The National
Dog. Buy your turkey. Get ready.
Did you just call me a turkey? What?
Well, if it fits, then go ahead. Put it on.
I thought so. I should never give him that opening. It is the National Dog Show presented by Purina, which John O'Hurley, you know, from Seinfeld. And this guy, David Fry, has been broadcasting for more than two decades now. And one of the top rated shows, it's on NBC after the Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade. It's one of the top rated shows on, I think, last year on television. Last year, you guys.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
25 million people watch the show.
How many?
Every year. 25 million. Wow. There's no dog show on television that touches that.
No.
There's a lot of other shows, awards shows, the Emmys, the Oscars. They can't touch us. Well, Oregon, Ohio State, the biggest football game in this fall so far. They had 13 million and they were thrilled with that audience. We get 25 million every year. So we've got a great responsibility to people, to our dogs and the people in the sport and the people who are involved with dogs, to tell them what's going on. And that's what we do.
Do you get nervous?
No. My nervous comes, any nervous condition that I have is created by the fact that I'm representing our sport, our sport of dog shows, and our dogs to the world that maybe doesn't have that same exposure that I do every day. And well, I want to make sure I'm doing that properly and in a way that everybody understands what we're talking about and that they're entertained along the way.
Well, yes. And you and David Fry excel at that. And you know dogs, every breed. Name a breed. He knows the history of the breed. I mean, this guy, I'm talking about you. You're incredible that way, but your passion for dogs goes beyond dog shows, and we're talking about animal-assisted activities. Do you think some dogs are just almost born to do this, have this innate something where they walk into a room and they know what that patient in the hospital needs? I had one of those dogs where I feel that way. This dog would just make people laugh, and she knew appropriately, the dog's name was Lucy, and appropriately knew how to do that.
I say it all the time. I say great therapy dogs are born, not made. They have to start with a temperament and personality that will lend them to that. But I also say that in therapy dog work, the human partner is the very important part of that, because the human partner has to provide cues to the dog, has to protect the dog, has to protect the patient. I don't want my dog stepping in the middle of somebody's sutures while they're laying on a bed. So I've got to protect them that way, but the dog comes to understand that and comes to feel that and does that. And I think our training process that we go through in our world of therapy dogs is aimed more at the human than it is at the dog. The dog's got to cooperate, but the human's got to be in control. The human's got to be the alpha dog in that relationship. And I think that's what makes it work. But yeah, great dogs, great therapy dogs are born. You can make other dogs, other breeds into therapy dogs, and they can be very good at it. But you better be ready for that.
Yeah. So I think you can train if the dog has basically the right temperament. You could train lots of dogs to do this. I do think that some dogs, though, are superstars. They're goats, you know. They excel at this.
My dog Grace was a goat.
Yeah.
In the therapy dog world, she was one of the two best therapy dogs I've ever seen in action. The other one was James, who was the Springer Spaniel that actually won Best in Show at Westminster in 2007. And he was the greatest therapy dog I ever saw work.
I remember.
It's unbelievable, because he was always focused on the kid, on the patient, on whoever was in their room. He wasn't so worried about him. I had Uno. I had the great Beagle that won Best in Show at Westminster back in 2008. He came and lived with me, and I made him into a therapy dog. But it was still, there was a whole element when we would walk into a room that it was about him. And after a while, he came to understand that it was about the people too. But you know, he's a superstar, so he was used to it being about him. But so you can get dogs. The dogs just have to like people. Let's start with that, and then you go from there. You understand that I'm in charge, and you do what I say, and we'll have fun, and we'll do good things for people in need.
Didn't you write a book about all this called Angel on a Leash?
I did. I did write a book about it. It was fun to write the book. I thought about writing another book, but I want to live on that one. We use it everywhere we go, and it was great fun to make that happen.
And you also organize a event every year at Ronan College, having to do with everything we're talking about.
The National Dog Show Therapy Dog Ambassador team that we have there inspired us to put on a similarly named symposium about therapy dogs and about therapy dogs and therapy dog people, and bring us together in December at Rowan University. And we have great things happen there. It's a sharing of knowledge, sharing of love of what we do, and we all can get there and learn things about our dogs and about the process, and have great times happen.
The speaker, your at least I guess keynote speaker this year, is the great Dr. Aubrey Fine, who's written many books and has done research on this topic. And what Dr. Fine said, and what is one of the first to indicate years ago, is we know now how beneficial this is for people. Studies have been done all over the world. They've been replicated over and over. We know this is helpful for people when done the right way. But what about the dogs? And Dr. Fine and now others have looked at that and have found as good as it is for the people that they're visiting, as good as it is for the volunteers who go with the dogs, it's good for the dogs too.
Well, I agree with that, and I think the dogs get a lot out of it. You have to be careful, because you you can't always know this, but you have to have a feel for your dog and know when it's right. There are times I say to myself, I limit my visits to an hour, and I might do two or three different visits during the course of a week. So my dog gets 3, maybe 4 hours of time in with people, and I have to know when they're right and when they're not. I mean, I have bad days too, where I'm not really into it for some reason, or I'm distracted by something else going on in my life. But when I walk in, I watch my dog carefully, and I usually an hour is the maximum.
Yeah,
but there are times where I'll look at her and I'll say, "Hey, you're not right today." I said, "We're going to close out here and go home. Yep. We'll come back another day."
Yeah, and that's the right thing to do.
But you have to do that too.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do. I'm cutting you short only because we're out of time. I could talk to this guy for days, and at times in my life I have. Here is David Fry, the National Dog Show presented by Purina on Thanksgiving Day after the Macy Thanksgiving Day Parade. It's on NBC. If you're in Chicago, it's on Channel 5. With John O'Hurley, who will be here next week. David, it's always fun to talk to you.
Thank you, Steve. It's great being on with you.
It's that time of year right now where all of the urban wildlife, whether we're talking about opossum, coyote, squirrels even, they're out more than any other time of year, and that includes skunks. So what happens, is it skunk or skunks? I don't know. But what happens if your dog or cat gets skunked? Number one, I've got a six-step process here. Get a clothespin. That's for your nose. Number two, scrub the pooch or cat in a solution of 1 quart hydrogen peroxide, 1/2 cup baking soda, and 1 teaspoon of dish soap. Dawn is preferred. Number three, rinse. Number four, scrub the pet again, this time with a solution of 1/2 tomato juice and 1/2 water as needed. Number five, rinse. And number six, go to the movies for a while because your house and that room the dog or cat is in is still going to smell like skunk. Check it out. My website, stevedale.tv. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.